The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fernelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fernelli. That's Bud Elliott. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/Cover3 and everywhere you get your podcasts on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe, smash that like, and come and join us in the chat, aka the Cover 3 tailgate. I see you stand up, cracking a cold one, jumping in, because buddy, we got a lot to get to. NFL draft preview conversation topics from the college angle. We're going to save all that for Thursday, because we have a fairly interesting combination of words that are Derek Dooley, private equity, and group of five playoff. We'll explain a little bit more of how those are tied together in a little bit. The transfer portal, absolutely buzzing. We've got a couple quarterbacks. We've got a very former highly touted prospect running back. And we've also got, you know, I didn't know if I was, you know, really feeling like the, you know, it was added to the soundboard, because I don't know how much run it would get, but, you know, just a little like, wait till I get my money right. Because, hey, we've got some stars that were in the portal that are going to stay home, and we've got some big announcements about stars who are not going to be into the portal via re-upping with their NIL. Plus, we got Herm Edwards and Arizona State NCAA news coming out. But we got to begin really at the heart of a college football fan. Because when I think about Reggie Bush and telling the story of college football during the 2000s, one of the, you know, the things that was really disappointing about this whole, you know, Heisman Trophy taken away from Reggie Bush was that you cannot tell the story of college football in the mid-2000s without talking about Reggie Bush as a true, like, superstar. We didn't have social media, so you couldn't say that something went viral. But I tell you what, like, little video clips of Reggie Bush were getting sent on listservs, and, you know, the FW:FW:FW:, check out these insane highlights. I mean, this was a generational talent, and we find out here on Wednesday morning, the Heisman Trust is has, let's see, what are we going to say? We are a historic reinstatement of the 2005 Heisman Memorial Trophy to Reggie Bush. This from Michael Comerford, the president of the trust. We are thrilled to welcome Reggie Bush back to the Heisman family in recognition of his college accomplishments. We considered the enormous changes in college athletics over the last several years in deciding that now is the right time to reinstate the trophy for Reggie. We are so happy to welcome him back. Tom, what'd you think about the news coming out that Reggie's getting his Heisman back? He'll be back at the ceremony. And I'm sure that the Heisman House commercials are writing themselves right now in terms of him getting his keys back.
It's about damn time, because it really never should have been taken from him to begin with. But I get it why they did it, and it's their choice to do so. But it took way too long for common sense to kind of return to that and give it back. But I'm happy he has it. There's a part of me that wonders, and this is dark.
Okay.
There's a part of me that wonders if O.J. Simpson's death played a role in this, because O.J. Simpson died, what, last week? And he was in the news, and we all know what O.J. Simpson was accused of and what he went to trial for and all this stuff, and even went to prison for other crimes. Never had his Heisman taken away. But Reggie Bush had his Heisman taken away. So O.J. Simpson coming back in the news, and the fact that, oh, hey, that guy still has his Heisman. Why doesn't Reggie Bush have his? Maybe if that kind of pushed things a little bit more.
Do you remember that the Heisman Trophy Trust was one of the few? They released a like condolences tweet. Mm-hmm. I don't think I saw one from USC. I don't think I saw one from the Buffalo Bills.
No.
And I did see a response to the tweet. Now, if you want to just do one more dark joke. Okay. All right. Well, we've got a minimum of how many living running backs from USC we can have at one time. Oh no, we need to meet our quota. You can just continue to add from there. But what'd you make of the developments on Wednesday for Reggie and the Heisman Trust in general?
I mean, I thought Johnny Manziel was right. We have a short out on our YouTube channel saying that he was right. I think the Heisman, honestly, is kind of struggling to remain relevant in some cases. Like, I'm not a voter. I still think it's a cool award, but I don't know if the next generation of folks really care. So doing anything you can to be like, hey, we righted a wrong. We are keeping up with the ever-changing sport of college football is probably just smart. And I agree. Like, if you put out tweets like that about OJ, and yet you're still banning Reggie, you know.
Doesn't add up.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to reiterate this. I am mostly happy for Reggie.
Yes.
It's cool every December when all the Heisman winners get to go hang out together. I mean, that is an amazing room that tells the history of college football. And that's sort of the other part of this is I love college football, and I think it's a disservice if somebody comes parachuting in. I mean, like, we know people who didn't love college football and they pick it up at 16, 17, 18 years old, or they're picking it up recently and they're spending time just trying to learn about the history of the sport. And I think it's very important that we don't put any asterisks or anything else. Reggie Bush was, in the definition of the Heisman Trophy, the most outstanding player in college football, and it was outstanding to watch what he could do on the field. So I'm fired up for Reggie, and I think that college football in general is going to be better off, maybe not today, but like 5-10 years down the line, once people are starting to learn about the mid-2000s, that there's no sort of star or anything special on this one.
Yes, I am happy for Reggie. I put out the video. I thought he should get his Heisman back. But there are certainly guys who were wronged by the system, like much more than Reggie was. Like Maurice Claret, who was ineligible, shortly thereafter. What happened with him, right? There's a lot of guys out there who we can name that Reggie played in the NFL. Dude does super well. Now he works for.
Mean like impermissible benefits? Like if we're to extend this conversation out, like there's a lot of people whose livelihoods got wrecked for a similar or even lesser NCAA offense that did not end up like Reggie.
Completely, yeah.
Got it.
What are the odds that Reggie shows up to Big Noon Kickoff in week zero or week one next year with the Heisman just on the desk?
I mean, the first time that they have USC on Big Noon, They've got to have
it. I would just have it with me for whatever their week zero game is. I would just have it sitting there for the first Big Noon Kickoff, just on the desk in front of me the entire time.
There have been some bubbling to this, by the way. I know you mentioned the OJ thing at the beginning. It was in August that USC as a school reinstated Reggie into its Hall of Fame and was like, all right, we're not doing any more of this disassociation crap that sometimes happens when schools have to swear off a star player like they never knew the guy. We've seen the similar thing happen at Michigan over the last 5 to 10 years for men's basketball, where after disassociating themselves from the Fab Five. It's like, no, like these guys are a huge part of the reason why Michigan fans love Michigan basketball. So that happened last August, I believe. Also, I think in November, December, 24/7 Sports, Brandon Marcello had that story. Reggie Bush, Reggie wants his Heisman back.
Yep.
There were some murmurs about potential legal action that Bush could take against the Heisman Trust. So, yeah, a lot of things built to this point, I think, over the last 8 to 10 months. And now we've gotten here on Wednesday with the Heisman Trophy for Reggie Bush.
All right, while we are righting wrongs, Bobby Bowden lost his wins, which cost me all-time's wins record due to a music class, which like other students took as well. And they didn't take away Joe Paterno's wins for what he allowed at his program. So
they didn't?
Didn't he get them back?
They vacated them.
Now that he got his wins back. So like, I'd be a lot more comfortable if the all-time wins leader in the sport was not Joe Paterno.
Hmm.
I don't know. I mean, Florida State would have just sat those games out anyway.
They would have opted out.
Yeah. Florida State opted out of those wins.
That's a great call, because regular students do it too. Is an excuse that many schools in NCAA trouble have gotten yes. away with.
And like vacating wins has always been the absolute dumbest punishment out there. I think College Football Reference still keeps them like track of the vacated wins on the all-time records. That's what I use for my official record book.
Oh yeah, there's a couple of coaches where my normal Wikipedia scan gets messed up. Hugh Freeze is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go try to pull Hugh Freeze, and then you're like, oh wait, hold on, wait a second, because they keep all the losses.
3-0 that year.
Yeah. And why do you not vacate the losses too?
Yeah.
You have to wear the L's and you lose all the W's. Makes no sense. So, yes, Reggie Bush gets his Heisman Trophy back. That was breaking news this morning. Jumped on CBS Sports HQ to talk about it just a little bit. If you're multi-screening right now, that's how I'm in two places at once. All right. So we also had, as I mentioned earlier, there are college football playoff meetings going on right now in Dallas. And there's no action items. We're not expecting a vote or, in any official changes to where they are currently in terms of their plans for 2024 and 2025, in terms of their plans for 2026 and that 6-year extension that they have on the deal. But there was a little bit of a buzz that's going around these meetings, which includes just, loosely conversations about the Group of Five conferences having their own playoff. This comes as the Group of Five has made it very, it was very difficult for the Group of Five to be able to crack the 4-team playoff model, only doing it once with Cincinnati. This comes after, while they're getting a spot, one guaranteed spot in the 12-team model for the next 2 years and, potentially moving forward, the revenue distribution is extremely tiered. I mean, it ain't even haves and have nots. It's the big dogs, the little dogs, and the runts. And so, looking to potentially generate more revenue, there is a proposal or a pitch that former Tennessee head football coach Derek Dooley is leading for a playoff for the Group of Five backed by private equity. CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd had the story yesterday. It has been also reported elsewhere since then. Tom, do you think that this is a good idea?
I think it's a good idea in that a G5 playoff could possibly bring more attention to those leagues because there's quote unquote more at stake with some of their games during the regular season. I don't know if it will be financially viable enough to really truly make a difference for them. Like I don't know what the rating. You look at a MAC game on a Tuesday night or a Conference USA game on a Wednesday night. The ratings are good. It's just I don't know, compared to what you're going to get with a college football playoff, what the ratings are going to look like compared to that, how much of an appetite there will be from television networks for it. I'm sure there will be some, but you also look around the landscape right now, and it's not like networks are currently throwing tons of money at anything right now. They're kind of financially strapped themselves. So I don't know if it's a great idea from that standpoint. I also think you kind of just devalue yourself if you admit we're not good enough for the regular playoffs. So from a brand recognition point, I don't think it helps. And then the worst part of it to me is you mentioned private equity. I don't want private equity anywhere near this sport. I think it's a serious, like we talk about, you know, conference realignment and television, all that stuff that changes the sport. I don't think college football is going to die from it. I think private equity is an existential threat to sports. I look at what private equity has done to a lot of industries in this country where they'll give you the money and they'll let you stick around as long as they can get what they can get out of it. But the second the profits stop reaching a certain point, they strip that crap for parts. So if you put private equity into a G5 playoff, as soon as it stops being worth the squeeze, they will strip them from parts and leave absolutely nothing left. So keep private equity the hell away from it. If you can get a television network who wants to pay for it and it's enough to, where the schools feel like it's worth it, go for it. But just, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why they would do this. Isn't this exactly what Sankey and Petitti want them to do?
Kinda.
That's why I would listen. I would take notes and I would stuff it in a folder, and the folder is behind the glass that you smash if there's an emergency. You know, let Big Ten and SEC be the bad guy. Don't let them break away because you ran away first. You hang on at the top level until the top level separates itself again. I do not think it's a terrible idea. I do not think it should be something that is pursued right now.
Completely agree. I do think Oresco could be setting himself up for an awesome consulting deal.
He's on his way out, right?
Yeah. I've been reading his comments. Like, this guy's going to get a bag if he wants it in consulting with all these G5 leagues. The only reason they're including a G5 team in the current playoff format is just because it's easier than dealing with potential antitrust problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? If these guys break off and do their own thing, it's a niche product. I'll watch it. I'll love it. It won't scale. They largely exist on TV to fill like non-traditional TV time slots. Like, they don't get any good TV time slots on Saturday. ESPN dumps them all on ESPN Plus, right? See, like, we occasionally put them on CBS on Saturdays. For the most part, it fills CBS Sports Network or on weeknights, which I, of course, love watching and betting on. And, you know, like, I just don't know if this is a great idea right now. I think that eventually it makes some sense. But I think I'd kind of rather be forced out and maybe, like, you know, cut me a check or break me off a little piece of something so we can, you know, that type of thing, as opposed to doing our own. If they go on their own, I just don't know if there's actually great value in this.
The other thing, a fight that we've been having, I know I've been on the front lines of it, but if you are in the Army that believes that college football is not about the playoff and that college football is special because of its regular season, the Group of Five conferences, with what they've done with midweek football, which now exists in October and November, and now exists with Conference USA, Sun Belt, the MAC, where the American Athletic Conference has really taken over some of its premier Thursday spots, as we've seen power conferences pivot off Thursday until you get later into the year. That's how you're unique. I think that is something that you can continue to sell and you can continue to use so that you're in the consciousness. If you are running a playoff at the same time as the actual college football playoff, I think you're going to find it much more difficult to be able to break through and command the kind of, you know, financial incentive. I'm not really good at that side of it, but I can at least speak to the cultural incentive, or just like how much the college football world is paying attention and talking about you. Cause I guarantee you, watching Western Kentucky light it up on a Wednesday in October is going to get a lot more talk and buzz than whatever happens in a Group of Five playoff that's going on in December and January.
Now, if they do find like non-traditional, like non-competitive spots in December and January, there is a potential opportunity here because of the declining, not important, a little bit less passion for some bowl games amongst like the diehard fans. The casuals still watch it because it's something on, but that's the point. If you make this the something on, that could actually sort of replace what bowl games give you from a TV rating standpoint.
I don't want to steal. I apologize for stealing the joke because I only saw it in passing. But the back and forth was something on the lines of someone reacting to the proposal. And they said, well, this just looks like 16 beef of Brady's bowl. And somebody else saying, well, that sounds great to me. You know, everybody's got their own flavors here. Maybe you do want to watch, you know, the Bahamas Bowl over and over and over again. Sure. But I would not rush into this development. Again, Tom, you got anything else?
No, I mean, no.
The again, the full story, Dennis Dodd, I believe, was one of the first ones to get it out over on CBSSports.com.
I will say this is like, what, the fifth time we've heard this?
What, a group of five playoff?
Yeah, like this is like the fifth time in like the last 10 years I feel like this has been proposed as an idea. Like it was Sean Frazier, the athletic director at Northern Illinois, who was pushing for it for a long time. Now it's Derek Dooley. It's just, it gets pushed a lot, yet for whatever reason, it hasn't come to fruition.
I think that there is, because of the changes throughout college sports, I've used the term the no bad ideas point of things. I think that that's why we're hearing about college sports tomorrow and, you know, the, the group of five playoff. Everyone's just a little bit antsy. And
I think that, like Bud said, there's a lot of consulting dollars out there right now. Between private equity and consulting, like when a market is, you know, disrupted and you can get in there and there's a lot of, you know, wiggle room, you see a lot of this stuff. Time for ideas.
If we didn't love the Cover 3 tailgate so much, we could undercut all these guys and give equally good advice. If not better, at least equally good.
I was going to say, it won't be worse than a lot of the stuff you hear, that's for sure.
All right. Coming up on the other side, the transfer portal is buzzing. Where will Fat Joe Milton lean back? We'll get into that and more next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, we've got lots of entries. So let's jump on into the portal. Tom, we got to start with Deacon Hill, forever a Hawkeye. I mean, he gave us the full letter, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what his signature looked like, but I feel like I know right now. What? How about this? Let's start with, before we get to the Deacon Hill side, what's Iowa going to do at quarterback? Because Deacon Hill was taking significant snaps during spring practice as Cade McNamara continues to work his way back to full health. And
Another quarterback who was recruited out of high school by Tim Lester at Western Michigan also entered the portal shortly after the Deacon Hill news hit, Chip.
Oh, so if you connect the yarn and the dots, what quarterback was that?
Brendan Sullivan from Northwestern.
Northwestern!
Mm-hmm. I mentioned it's funny. If that is what is happening, it is so absolutely perfect and fitting that Iowa is going shopping for quarterbacks at Northwestern. But to the Deacon Hill point, the reaction from Iowa fans has been kind of hilarious in that it's like, I have nothing against the kid. He's a really nice kid. Thank God he's gone, which is pretty much like the consensus feeling from Hawkeyes fans because they were terrified of another season of going in with Deacon Hill as their quarterback. For me, I would give anything to see like Deacon Hill in a Ball State uniform next year, or, you know, just playing on a Tuesday night. Cause I feel like you put Deacon Hill in the MAC and maybe you can get something going there.
I think they're banking on McNamara being healthy, which I think is risky. I mean, the guy has a history of injuries. I don't think he's particularly a good player when he is healthy. He's not terrible. Like, he's clearly much better than Deacon Hill is. I was making some jokes on Twitter yesterday, which I usually don't do, about, like, it would be hilarious if Iowa's quarterback situation devolves to where it's like, actually, they miss Deacon Hill this year. But they keep telling about this quarterback they got, Marco, who's like super athletic.
Lines, so, or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I actually am very inclined to believe them. So, you know, we've said on the show before, other schools think they recruit receiver at like a MAC level. So how much does quarterback matter? We find out it actually does matter some. Like, you can't run Deacon Hill out there and expect to do much.
And they still got to the Big Ten.
Yeah. They still won the West.
We're going to be like shooting videos. Like, you know how we shoot videos now to educate kids on what happened in the 90s? Right. Many of us are still working this job in like 10 years. You'd be like, guys, there used to be this division called the Big Ten West.
And it was okay? Beautiful.
And it was like fighting each other with mini brooms. You know, yeah.
Whoa. Not with mini brooms. I would say it's more like it's closer to sledgehammers, because it is physically punishing. It's just not efficient.
Yeah, that is true. Okay, fair enough.
Another angle to this, the Deacon Hill news. A lot of schools are looking for defensive tackles in the portal.
This is so true.
Just saying.
Deacon, I'm telling you.
Just beef up a little bit. Not even that much.
Just and then think about, I mean, you know, people talk about a quarterback on the defense. What if you've got a quarterback on the defense? The recognition is going to be incredible.
Do you know where I really want to see him go, actually?
Where?
It's Colorado.
Oh.
Like, behind that offensive line, you know, they have trouble getting a backup quarterback there because, you know.
No one wants to play behind Shador. Are they having trouble? Like that?
Oh, it's the competition. Open competition.
Open competition.
Competition elsewhere is what Colorado running back Dylan Edwards is going to be seeking. Former five-star prospect, hit the ground running. We remember him with a couple touchdown catches early in the season for the Buffs and those big-time wins. Obviously, we are not that far separated from his evaluation as a prospect. You think Dylan Edwards is one of the obviously a top name, but do you think it's one of the top players in a running back market that right now we've talked as a position of need for a lot of different teams?
Yeah. So I don't think like I downgrade Colorado that much for losing, kind of a scat back in Dylan Edwards, but I do think he's somebody that a lot of teams will take a look at. He actually played Pop Warner ball with Avery Johnson. In fact, Avery Johnson tweeted some photos of this pretty recently, which I know that we have. So yeah, that's Avery Johnson handing off to Dylan Edwards as a kid. We think they are there probably.
Yeah, what age do we think?
That's 9 or 10.
8 to 10, yeah.
Babies.
Yeah. So, I mean, they clearly know each other. Kansas State has had some very recent success with undersized backs in that offense. He would have a chance to make a bowl game. He would actually be able to play for a conference title and probably make more NIL money at Kansas State than he can at Colorado. So, you upgrade the program, you go play with your buddies, and you have a chance to win a conference title. That seems like a good opportunity for me.
Yeah.
What stinks to me is like when they got Dallin Hayden like 2 days ago, I was like, oh, that's a really good pickup for Colorado. Him and Edwards, that's going to be like a really kind of an excellent combination for them to have in the backfield. And then 24 hours later, Edwards is hitting the portal. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I still like Hayden, but I really liked it when you had multiple options. So yeah, it's. I think Edwards is a very good, kind of like Bud was saying, a scat back, undersized. Once you get him in the open field, he can run away from people, but he's not really the kind of running back you're going to be looking to hand the ball off to 20, 25 times a game. So it was like, I was thinking it would be Hayden would be the feature back, and then Edwards would be the scat back kind of pass catching option. So it kind of hurts that I think that he's leaving, but you're right. Kansas State, going all the way back to Darren Sproles, undersized running backs do well in that color of purple.
I can't explain it. It is it's marvel. Yeah, it just works. All right, let's keep the portal before we get to some of the other portal developments, players who are jumping in. So Derek Harmon, who's played a good bit over the last two seasons for Michigan State along the defensive line. We remember we talked about Simeon Barrow. It's a very good player on the defensive line for Michigan State. I was looking at some of the Michigan State side of things. They've got this up to like 7 rotation players from this Michigan State defense. But do you have any insight on sort of the vibe or the buzz there? Because, you know, you throw Jonathan Smith, Aiden Childs at me, I'm going to be, oh, okay, Michigan State. This is often one of those, like, yeah, it looks shiny up top, but the insides and the engines might need a little bit of work. What's the level of concern right now about the Spartans defense?
I would say extreme concern.
Okay.
When you lose those two guys who were huge keeps in the winter window, that was set to be, in my opinion, one of the strengths of that Michigan State defense. And I have a lot of confidence in coordinator Joe Rossi, who they stole from Minnesota. And I have a ton of confidence in Jonathan Smith. I think he's one of the premier, coaching and development coaches in college football. And they got Aiden Childs when a lot of other schools wanted Aiden Childs. So there's a lot going right at Michigan State. But, man, like, I don't know how you don't step up and keep at least one of these two guys. And I know they made him a good offer. Spartan 247 site reported that back in the winter window. But as Fat Joe said, yesterday's price is not today's price, okay? And when Jay Toya went back to UCLA, that took one of the bigger names out of the market. And I think some of these big-time D tackles are going to get somewhere between $600,000 and $900,000 for one good year. So, again, the price on D tackles has really gone up because LSU needs two. Texas thought it had Toya, from what I understand, and UCLA stepped up to keep him. And, I made a comment yesterday on Twitter. It's like 3 different networks are paying you. How do you not, like, have your boosters step up and divert the booster money to NIL? Okay? Like, that's – I don't know. Like, I had higher hopes for Michigan State than this, personally.
And we'll say, though, shout out to UCLA for keeping Toya, because I did – that was like, huh?
Dude, you lose him, Latu, the Murphy twins.
Mm-hmm.
Good night.
That gets – so – not only did Texas think they had him, they did have him on campus for the spring game.
Mm-hmm.
The spring game that led our spring game takeaways, because it was competitive. It was fun. It had Arch Manning. Like, if you were in Austin around that Texas football program, you likely left Austin with the thought, like, hey, this team might play for a national championship this year. And yet he comes back, and then we get the announcement on social media that Jay Toya's going to be at UCLA. Huge, huge, huge for year one, Deshaun Foster. Remember, Deshaun Foster, the head coach of UCLA.
Oh, I should write that down.
Yeah, listen, UCLA, a Big Ten team, the head coach of UCLA, Deshaun Foster. These are sticky notes in my office, okay, just to remind myself. Also, Tom, they've been talking about us over there at Inside Carolina. You know, phenomenal part of the 24/7 Sports Network. I believe, normally it's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Wish Chip was a bigger homer. Oh, like he tries to fake like he doesn't like Carolina. But they said, I wonder if Chip Patterson and Tom Fornelli will give as much time to Omarion Hampton announcing a recommitment with North Carolina's NIL collective. We were cracking loose references amid speculation. I stand by the fact that my speculation was that there were programs with spending power that were very interested in a 1,000-yard back like Omarion Hampton hitting the transfer portal. So with this, Tom, I guess we got to start it. This is a huge hit for North Carolina.
Yeah. First of all, the transfer portal is free agency. It's all fluid. Offers come, offers go. Somebody steps up, things can change quickly. Because you said it was very informed speculation about Omarion Hampton and a couple of schools. But this is huge for North Carolina in that, you don't have Drake May anymore. You don't really know who your quarterback's going to be. Odds are, whatever the situation, they're going to have to lean on the run game a bit more next season than they have in recent years when they had May and they had Howell and they had those receivers. So to keep him in the fold, I think is a very big deal for North Carolina. Now, I still think they need to upgrade their offensive line, and we still need to see what happens at quarterback, but this is a win. Like, if you're a North Carolina fan, there's nothing to feel about this but other than thrilled.
I talked to somebody yesterday who's pretty in the industry, and he thought that as of like the week before Rutgers deal got done, he was actually kind of low-key the one who was more in danger of leaving. So I think it's huge North Carolina stepped up, not only for Hampton and for Rucker, because that guy's got some real pass rush juice.
Yeah, come on, Rucker. I definitely should have mentioned him as well. I know the North Carolina fans, but it was a dual announcement that their top offensive star and their best pass rusher were both recommitting themselves. And that news coming after the spring game, when you were kind of looking like, all right, spring game's over. What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. So, Mac Brown and Chip Lindsey, Jeff Collins, the new defensive coordinator, they are all going to be feeling a little bit better here as the portal winds down over the next 6 days or so.
I do hope North Carolina worked in some bonuses in Hampton's deal for pass blocking. Like, hey, just chip somebody. We'll give you 10 grand.
Some of these are bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Look,
he's been on this. I went and watched him. Yeah.
Drake May was dealing with some stuff, folks. Just that's all I'm gonna
would you say room for improvement if we were doing the report card or like the NI needs improvement?
Yeah.
Hey, you got
there are not supposed to be as many free rushers through the A gaps as Drake May and North Carolina dealt with last year. I'll just leave it at that.
Look, we got size, we got speed, we got explosiveness. Okay, these are all the things on the left side. On the right side, buddy, you're going to get our quarterback killed, okay? Because it's not Drake May anymore. You know, whether it's Connor Harrell or Max Johnson, it ain't Drake May. So, yeah, look, Amarion Hampton's a stellar player. That's huge news for North Carolina. And it falls within, again, paired with Jay Toya, some of these resolutions to the transfer portal buzz is, hey, look, and that's kind of how the system can work. Hey, there's a rumor, or I'm actually in the portal, or I'm on an official visit. Well, guess what? You can always come back if you're able to reach a new spot with your current school.
Also, I say it as a joke, but for Omarion's own personal future earnings, show an ability to block. NFL teams truly do care about that. It's hard for running backs to make money at the next level. It's much harder when they don't feel like they can leave you in passing situations.
You got to be so damn good as a runner for the NFL to ignore your pass protection.
Mm-hmm. I got two. Are you want to do this one from Ryan, bud?
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting question. So
Ryan says, is anyone that has entered the portal since it opened in the spring session a day one or day two pick?
Day two encompasses round two and three.
Second and third, yeah.
I would say there's a 100% chance that a couple guys who have gone in will be drafted by the end of day two. Just mathematically. Are there guys we can point out right now? Toya went in and came back. I think he has a chance to be a top 100 guy.
Yeah.
Maybe Harmon or Barrow, potentially, if they have a big season, could.
Is Jaden Rashada a third-round pick?
Maybe one day, but it's way too early to.
Have we talked about him in Georgia doing kind of like the Dante Moore thing, like Oregon's doing?
No.
Have we seen programs like do this before, where they take a really talented guy who kind of needs a reset and stash him? It's an interesting thing that's going on here.
Yeah, I think we could. It's like kind of a pushback on it was for years there with the portal first opening. It's just like as soon as a guy wasn't getting playing time, they were immediately bolting for starting time. Now it's like you're seeing a pushback where guys are like, no, actually, you know what? I could use a year to just sit and learn. So I think that with top programs, like you look at the teams like the Oregons and Georgias, teams that are going to be competing for conference titles and playoff bursts every year and national titles, I think you will start to see it a lot more with those guys. Not like it won't be the more popular or overwhelming thing, but I think you're going to start seeing it more and more. I mean, Arch Manning's doing it at Texas. He didn't transfer, but that's what he's doing.
Right. Is Rashada to Georgia set? Or is that just kind of like where the buzz is pointing?
I think it's just where the buzz is pointing. I don't think he's announced anything.
Okay. Buzz, very loud buzz.
Right. And then Jordan says, how about Damian Martinez still in the portal? Bud, how do you feel about that?
I feel like he's still going to Miami until somebody tells me different. I think that's the guy they wanted for a while. If I had to read some tea leaves here, like Miami needs a D tackle. They just lost Jared Harrison Hunt, who I don't think is a stud, but obviously played a lot for them last year and would project to play a lot this year. So their need for a defensive tackle only ratcheted up. The Atoya going back to UCLA also impacts a school like that because they're in the D tackle market. And that means Texas is now probably in on one of the guys that you were also in on. So you're going to give a lot more money to a D tackle than you are running back. If you're smart. So
also,
I mean, I would guess they're trying to like, hey,
we need to pay this. And then
we'll give you our final number when we figure out what a D tackle is going to cost us.
Also, like, I'm not going to diminish Damian Martinez in any way, because I think he's a good player, but he also ran behind the best run blocking offensive line in the country last year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Good player. Great player.
They have to get a back, though. Because, like, I mean, we were dead on with Trevante Citizen, like, not getting right physically, which sucks for him because he was a really nice prospect. And we don't know what Fletcher's going to be. Like, that bowl game injury was serious. So they have to get somebody at running back.
Interesting. All right. One last newsy item before we hit another break and then come back with a quick look ahead to Oregon, Nebraska, Colorado, and some of the spring game activity coming up this weekend. Again, this is sort of the last big spring game wrap up that we're going to have. Then also on Thursday, when we come back, we'll have DK back in the fold. We'll do a big NFL draft preview show. So it is Arizona State is finally starting to tie up the loose ends with their NCAA violations. Among them is a 5-year show cause for Herm Edwards. In total, 6 of the 10 coaches on the coaching staff have reached resolutions that include show cause penalties between 3 and 10 years. A reminder, show cause is not a hard ban from NCAA orchestrated college football, it is a soft ban because you have to show cause for why you were going to hire said coach. Tom, what do you make of, the Arizona State story, as we finally get to these final stages of the process?
That the show cause on that is pretty much it's heavier than I thought it was going to be. And I wonder if there's a part of it where, in recent years, the NCAA has kind of lost a lot of juice with what it's able to do. And I'm wondering if they were just looking at this as a situation where Herm Edwards ain't coming back to coach in college football. Let's just hammer the hell out of him so we could feel big and important.
But some of those other coaches might. I mean, that's the thing that stinks is those coaches that were on, that were not making, I'm Herm Edwards, I was hired by my former agent kind of contract. I mean, I think Herm Edwards, I do not have the numbers in front of me. I believe it was a $4.4 million settlement to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Daniels' mother also shows up in some of these NCAA issues as being involved with the scheme. And to keep it on the NFL front, current Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce removed himself from the university's efforts to reach a resolution. He will be tried, as much as you could, call the NCAA process a trial. Like a
court martial for the NCAA.
He will be tried separately, and some of the reporting around this is going to make it look like they're trying to pin a lot on Antonio Pierce. Like, he was the mastermind of a scheme to recruit around NCAA COVID rules. But are you hearing anything or any reaction to some of these penalties?
Not really much new. I think some of the coaches who got thrown under the bus by Herm Edwards and company are probably like, he's got a bully pulpit at ESPN now to act all sanctimonious, and he got paid out by the president and the AD. Arizona State, disaster. So I do hope that they are patient with Kenny Dillingham. Yeah.
Hey, but at least they left the place better than they found it. That's all you can ask from the Herm Edwards and the Ray Anderson regime. Just, it's not like the place is smoldering and burned to the ground or anything.
So this is going to be just like an interesting combination of of characters, because the likely number two pick in the NFL draft threw a touchdown pass to Brandon Ayuk, the hottest trade target, in a win against a team quarterbacked by Justin Herbert and coached by Miami's head coach in 2019. Yeah, this is that Arizona State team that we're like all coming back to right now with some of these
Herm had talented teams, man. Yeah, with everything else that was just an absolute mess.
That's right. All right, coming up on the other side, the Oregon Ducks. We talk about them like they're gonna be able to hit the ground running in the Big Ten. We get to see what the 2024 team might look like in a spring game on Saturday, plus what we're looking for Nebraska, Colorado, and more.
Next.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, one last big Saturday of spring games, and at least the headliner to me definitely is going to be the Oregon Ducks. Tom, what piques your interest when it comes to what we might be able to learn or gather from Oregon getting in Autzen Stadium on Saturday?
I want to see I look at Dylan Gabriel as just a left-handed Bo Nix, so I don't really think you're going to see that much different as far as the scheme and what the offense is going to look like and what the production is going to look like from the quarterback position. What I want to see is what the skill positions look like, because they've lost Troy Franklin. They're losing Bucky Irving. They're losing a few guys on the offensive line. I want to see how that looks. And I just think defensively, this was a team that last year, like, it just keeps getting better. Like, when I was watching Bo Nix tape and just like Michael Penix tape and all these, the Oregon defense, like week by week, month by month, just got better and better and better and better. And it's getting so much closer, where they're not at the talent level that Georgia is at, but they look like Georgia. So I just want to keep seeing that defense take the step forward, because I really think they've got some excellent players on that side of the ball. And that's probably what's most interesting to me in this spring.
I asked a buddy who's pretty clued in on Oregon, said, what's the odds that Dylan Gabriel was like the worst starter on this team? And he's like, dude, it's not zero. Like, they're pretty loaded. And that's not that's not saying Dylan Gabriel sucks. Like, I think we all think he's a very good college quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But if that's like actually the case, then you have to consider Oregon as like a legit national title contender. He thinks Lanning's got that thing going in the right way. So I'm very curious to see, like, how many dudes, like, flash as dudes.
Yeah, it's not like a huge spike, but, like, there's just a trend line. Since it's just slowly going up to that spot.
They did a good job in the portal.
They do a good job at a lot of things.
Yeah. I think flash. Their player tag has taken a major step up in her life.
I've spent all spring, and I'm just going to be a hype man. I mean, I like Texas and Oregon.
Yeah.
Well, what's going to be more fun than rooting for Texas and Oregon to hit the ground running and, you know, shake up the house a little bit? Jabbar Muhammad from Washington, like, that was a big pickup. Cam Alexander has gotten a lot of buzz. The pass defense is something that I know that Oregon fans have hoped would get fixed, because while they do a lot of things very well, it was going up against Michael Penix that resulted in three of the five losses of the Dan Lanning era. And that was the other thing. Dan Lanning, 22-5 as Oregon's head coach. Four of those five losses by 13 points combined. Dan Lanning is 22-5, and he is a handful of bounces away from being 26-1. I realize that's not how it actually works, but you understand what I'm saying. 3-point loss to Washington, 4-point loss to Oregon State, 3-point loss to Washington, 3-point loss to Washington. The margins between Oregon and competing for national championships are very, very small.
Yeah, that's the difference. It's like you can argue being in all those close games, like, you know, the luck, the coin flip, play goes this way, play goes that way. But you also have to learn how to win those games. And Oregon does consistently struggle the last few years in winning those games. And that's the one thing you kind of hope that to me is the next thing that they have to do. They have to figure out a way to win those games, because that's the difference between playoff contender and national title contender.
I'll add to your skill positions. The Tez Johnson was a really good opposite of Troy Franklin last year. They've got Gary Bryant Jr. and Evan Stewart like that. Yo, three really good players that you can put out there and really cause some problems for some defenses.
They also have this one dude on that team, Jurion Dickey, who was a physical freak as a recruit. So far, he hasn't done a thing. So I'm just going to be watching the spring game too. Like, does Dickey have a role in this offense? How are they using him? Because he is kind of like a bigger body, like Anquan Boldin, like twitch in terms of like short area, but not like necessarily great long speed, like leaper, contested catch type guy. So that'd be a different element for this offense if he can play to like the ceiling. I'm not saying he's Anquan Boldin. Please don't clip that in that way. But like stylistically, you know, like yeah.
Streets forget Anquan Boldin was a problem.
Real problem. All right, Nebraska. Tom, what do we think we're going to see from Matt Rhule's Huskers?
I just want to see Raiola. That's really, I have to write for Friday, like, about Nebraska and the next step that they have to take. And I'm trying to figure out a way to make the story more interesting and from a more different angle than they just need Raiola to be good. They just need a good quarterback because, like, but that's the case. Like, I think Nebraska last year defensively was solid. I think they're not a team that's going to be competing for a Big Ten title, but I do think that they are a team that should be getting to a bowl game at a minimum as far as the talent that they have. And I think Raiola is the one thing that can decide whether this is like a 6-6 and a 7-5 team or an 8-4, 9-3 kind of team. So I want to see Raiola. That's really all I care about in their spring game.
Offensive line as well, which at times last year was a bit of a problem. It really is, you know, Raiola. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, but I think their offensive line was a problem last year, but I also think Sims and Harburg were a problem for that offensive line because they were just moving around constantly. Like, the offensive line never had any idea where the QB was.
Did you guys see Sims is in the portal and considering Arizona State? I, like, love that.
Actually, that's a decent fit.
Dillingham, like, at some of the stuff at Memphis and then at Florida State and last year at Arizona State, has always done a pretty good job with, like, some of the pseudo wildcat stuff. And I thought Sam Levitt, the kid they took from Michigan State, was going to beat out Jaden Rashada. Mm-hmm. But, like, having a nice changeup, because last year they used that, like, running back kid to play a lot of wildcat in like meaningful games because they were just kind of out of
Bourget? Bourget?
No. The channel, no. Kind of like short, stubby guy.
Scatabo.
Like, you want to talk about
Cam Scatabo?
Oh, Scatabo, yeah. The running back?
Yeah.
Little bowling ball man.
Sims gives you, like, at least the like potential threat of passing in a sort of a heavy QB run package you could run if Sam Levitt needs a break. I'm kind of intrigued by that. If he can stop fumbling, which I mentioned this yesterday on Twitter, and all the Nebraska fans were like, yeah, the word if's doing a lot of work there, buddy. And yes. Yes, it is.
What was crazy was, like, Sims loses the job and then Harburg fumbled more often than Sims did.
Yeah. In hindsight, the NIL deal with the tallow company was just, you know, like, I know tallow's hot, but, like, it's just not.
And finally, the Colorado Buffs are going to be in action.
They are. I haven't heard anything about them this offseason.
The main thing I want to see here is, how does Lil Wayne's concert go after this event? Because at 4:00 in Boulder on Saturday, the projected temperature is 40 with a 100% chance of rain.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Little Wayne, little rain. So I'm thinking there's going to be a lot of rain.
yes. That, to me, is the most important thing for the Colorado Spring game. But also, I just want to see, like, if they go ones versus twos, I want to see what the twos look like.
Yeah.
Because you could sit there and be like, you know, we've got a plan with the portal. But even if you're bringing in better, like I said earlier in the show, I think Dallin Hayden's a very good get for them. I think he's a good player. But then your depth immediately takes more hits with, you know, Dylan Edwards leaving. I just think that you need depth in this sport to accomplish the goals that Deion is saying that they have and that they're trying to accomplish. And I am just not confident at all that Colorado has that kind of depth. So I want to see what the backups look like in this game.
Kellen says in the chat that the concert is indoors. So thankful for Lil Wayne. That's a good sign. Like actual football stuff I want to see. As Tom Fornelli pointed out today, I believe Shador was dead last in pressure to sack rate in the entire Power 5 last year, which the pressures are not on him. How many times those pressures converting to sacks? That is on Shador. So I'd like to see, like, is the ball getting out a little bit quicker? Some teams would be nice if your five-star offensive tackle comes in and starts. They need five-star offensive tackle Jordan Seaton to come in and be, like, a good starting player for them immediately, especially because Savion Washington dipped out of there and is probably going to go start now at Syracuse. So, true freshman Jordan Seaton, how does he look? My guess is he'll probably look, you know, mostly okay. And then I'm interested to see, like, how do they incorporate some of the new receivers they brought in and how much they let Travis Hunter play offense.
It'd be great if Shador showed an ability to know where the ball was going before the snap more often. Not just what his read is, but just being able to look at the defense and say, okay, this is what they're doing, so this is where I'm going.
I mean, we've got new coaching staff, like, across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to scheme up a spring game. That's a fool's errand. Or who knows? Maybe Deion Sanders is so innovative, he actually runs a full fall game script in a spring game. Like for example, Oregon, we know is going to be capital B bland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to be playing cover three.
Like they are going to get out there, and they are just going to see who can execute when both teams know exactly what's going to happen. Get out there, hit a little. But yeah, it is going to be brand new coaching staff on both sides of the ball for Colorado. I've got zero expectations. I hope to learn a lot. We'll see. It's kind of where I'm at. All right, let's take a couple questions. A reminder, tomorrow, in addition to our NFL draft preview, we will be taking questions from the Cover 3 tailgate and from the big old bag of mail. This question came in before we got started, more than an hour away, where Kyle says, so Texas A&M just had their quote-unquote cut day, and they cut a three-year starter at center who was a Texas kid. But the question that Kyle asks says, in the portal era, how do coaches balance managing their roster while also not pissing off their in-state high school coaches?
So, specifically as to the A&M example, I know there was frustration in that program in recent years with, like, the balance between Bryce Foster's football and his track and field. Also, he would, you know, be injured at times. So, I don't know if he's going to go focus on track and field. I think he's a good shot putter, I believe it is, or discus or something like that. So
speak to the example. I thought the question was interesting. But,
for sure.
But
like, sometimes you cut a guy because you're like, you're tired of his act. Sometimes you cut a guy because he's not very good, or just you got to make tough choices and you're over the roster limit. If he's from a school that really matters to you recruiting wise, you got to be a little more delicate with it. Maybe you put a little bit of extra effort in to find him a new home via the portal. You know, like, you call your buddies, like, hey, man, like, this guy's not working out here, but, like, he actually does have some ability. You should give him a second chance. It's a consideration. Like, if it's a real, real feeder high school for you, it's not that you don't cut him, but you are probably going to, like, be a little bit more delicate with the kid gloves and probably try to help him out a little more in the portal.
Yeah, I think you need to give it some consideration, but – My top priority, if I'm a college football coach, is having my job. Yeah. So I would rather have my job. So if I feel like I can upgrade the position and I kind of have to move a kid out, I hope I don't really piss off the high school coach, but he's not really the most important thing to me. It's putting the best team on the field and winning games. Because then, you know what? If I'm winning 10 games a year, that coach is still going to want to send his players to my school if I'm interested in his players, because that's good for everybody.
I'll also note, like, cut days have always existed. This is not a new thing. It used to be like when Nick Saban would oversign
medical red shirts
by 14 guys, they'd give you some choices like, hey, you can take this medical red shirt, like Tom was saying. You can go to East Mississippi Junior College because now, like now you don't have to do that. Now you can go play for another school immediately if they'll have you. Used to be you would have to sit out and lose a year of eligibility because your school was cutting you. And almost no kid would actually contest the cutting because it's really an embarrassment to do so. And it's a commentary on your ability to play at that school in most cases. So they would just kind of, you know, not say anything, take it, and they would, you know, be cut and go to East Mississippi JUCO. Now you can't oversign like certain amount. Well, you can now actually, but like they had a kind of an interim rule, and now the transfer portal has sort of taken away the need for the interim rule because now you can go and find a new spot immediately.
Yeah, and remember how shocked people were when they found out that scholarships were a year-by-year thing?
Oh, yeah.
Like most people thought they were four-year deals. It's like, no, it's always been year-by-year. They can cut your ass at any time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like Saban signed 28 guys a year for like a seven-year period. You only get 85 on your roster. Like 28 times four is not 85.
Yeah. Tom and I started working for CBS in 2010, and I remember one of the first things that broke my brain was when someone said, oh, yeah, he's going to gray shirt. I said, gray shirt? What's a gray shirt?
The one that really brought attention to this, there was two. There was a Tuberville class at Auburn and then the famous Houston Nutt class at Ole Miss. And I'm not going to say the exact number because I don't want Tom Mars to get it wrong and have Tom Mars DM me. But it was a lot. It was, yeah.
Way over five.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, yeah, let me Google it. Houston Nutt.
Yeah.
So also blue shirts. Remember blue shirts? There's green shirts. There's gray shirts. There's red shirts. You know, there's all sorts of colors.
Wasn't gray shirt the delayed enrollment or medical red shirt? Like just, hey, sorry, bud. We don't have room for you on the 85, but we want to keep you around. So just sit around for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. 37 players in 2009. Houston.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Maybe Houston Nutt is the golf partner that you want. Okay. He's giving strokes to everybody. Come on. We'll worry about that later. All right. We will be back on Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern time for our Cover 3 NFL draft preview and questions from the Cover 3 tailgate and the big old bag of mail. And you can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Tom Fernelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.